It's arrogant to think that you know why you didn't get a job.
I'm Lee Foster. You're listening to Action, the No Bullshit podcast dedicated to the pursuit of acting excellence. Enjoy this episode.
Brendan Taylor, thanks for being on the show, man.
Hey, thanks for having me, man.
So why don't you just give a quick background of who you are?
Sure. My name is Brendan Taylor. I live in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, and I work as an actor in the film industry here. I actually started in set decoration before I fully got into acting and earning my money in acting. So it's kind of a unique approach to how I sort of got into the biz. My mom and my uncle both worked on the other side of camera. And my mom just recently retired, actually. She was in set decoration, and then my uncle was a grip. But they both worked on commercials in the 90s. So she sort of wore a bunch of hats as art director for commercials, and commercials have smaller crews. And she would work on those, and she did a lot of toy commercials, Barbie, things like that in the 90s. And I hung around on set and then started helping her out, and then started getting paid to help her out, and then started meeting people through that. My first gig ever was The Wicker Man with Nicolas Cage, which is super epic. By the way, if you look up a video called Nicolas Cage Losing His Shit on YouTube, it's just genius, because like half of the footage is from that film. It's amazing. It just kind of led to other jobs, and I always loved acting. I loved it all through high school. I took it to university, just electives, but I never really thought. Weirdly, being on the other side of camera, it felt so much further away and unattainable, because we work on this side, and like, I don't, you know, the actors, they're just something else. It's another world. It's LA, it's Hollywood. I didn't know anything. Spending enough time on sets, watching people do what you love in front of your eyes starts to weigh on you a little bit. And you're like, okay, I have to make a move at some point. And I started to, fortunately here I am. So working, and I don't do that job anymore, I can say. Great job, but I'm fortunate to be about 5 years going full time. So yeah, pretty stoked about that.
And you have been in close to 100 commercials?
That's correct. Yeah. Go on.
And you've also, some of your TV credits include The Magicians, Bates Motel, Fargo, Supernatural, The Arrangement. So you're doing both TV and commercial and theater, I believe.
That's correct. Yeah. A lot of commercials. I've been getting close to, I think it's close to 100 now, which is pretty awesome. TV and film. Yeah, I've had some really cool roles. I have a recurring part on Supernatural. You know, the fan base there are pretty strong. That's now going into the 15th season on Supernatural. I've only been on 2 episodes, but never know what's going to happen. And some other great shows and theater as well. I cooperated a theater company for a few years, and we co-produced all our own thing. We did some pretty abstract plays, really getting to kind of extract the creativity out of some of these scripts and pushing myself. And it was all with friends, buddies who we met in acting class who were like, hey, let's do a play. Hey, that went well. That was fun. Let's do some more. And then it just kind of rolled from there. And I credit a lot of that time and my training is theater based and my time in theater to my success, like wholeheartedly. It's that's how I am where I am for sure.
Fascinating. I want to say right off the bat, because people are going to want to know who you are and see your work. What's your website?
Yeah, so you can check out brendan-taylor.com. I wish I got brendantaylor.com, but I'm not just sitting on that domain. You can see there. You can see some of my demos I've put up and some screenshots and photos. I also do coaching and taping here as kind of a side hustle. Just did one last night of a little girl. She's awesome. I've done some Skype coaching as well. I really enjoy the process of script analysis and breaking down stuff and trying to figure that out. It's something I've enjoyed, just get to do. And I get to work with cameras and work with actors and you know, I think directing is kind of on the horizon for me. So that's where I'm headed, I hope.
So you're the first person that I've interviewed who spent a lot of time on the other side of the camera, which is really interesting. And I'm wondering, you said that it seemed like it was so far away, acting, when you were right up next to it.
Yeah.
And do you feel like you learned a lot about how to do commercial acting from watching the actors?
Oh my God. Yeah. It's such a unique thing that I didn't plan, obviously, that not just commercial acting, but acting in general. I mean, I've spent hundreds of hours on a film set from growing up to working myself in the industry to acting myself. And to the point where that part feels so natural. And I know that can be really intimidating to people who are just getting on film sets. There's so much going on, but now I'm at a point where I can like see people, and just by looking at them, I kind of know what their position is. I can look at lighting setups, and sometimes I can kind of estimate like how long I have between setups. Like, do I have time to go to the bathroom or not, or to crafty? And just seeing how the camera's set up and how the whole process goes, where you can pick apart, like when you watch your favorite show and then you see it all, how they make it. Like I've been on sets where they make the entire thing. And then I go and watch the movie or the show at the end, and I'm like, oh, that's interesting. I remember that shot. And I remember that shot, and we'll piece it all together. So that for TV and film, like on screen acting, a lot of that has to do with the storytelling, right? Like the camera angles and things like that. So that's really fascinating to see, to compare the two experiences. So, and the other big thing with that is that I don't feel like I'm particularly special as an actor. Like I just feel like a cog in the machine, and that's a good thing. Like I feel like a collaborative part of this thing that we're making, rather than someone who needs like special attention. And, you know, I'm doing something special, you know, that is, you know, better or superior to someone else's job, versus like knowing that, yeah, those like makeup people have been here for 17 hours and the PA is in the parking lot and like, you know, all these people, like I know what I need. I don't have trouble asking for what I need, which isn't much, like maybe a bottle of water and a quiet place to run some lines. And it's good to work. But all of that is to serve pushing the project forward. It's not being diva. It's just like, this is what I need to do my thing. You guys need your time to set up lights or run cables or whatever it is. And let's just do this thing together. Let's make it. And that makes me feel better when I'm on sets. It just feels more confident when I do that, but act that way as well, treating people humanely and being kind and, you know, being grateful to be there. I mean, they could replace you like that. So, you know, just having that attitude has just really helped me, for sure. And that has come a lot from just being on film sets all the time. And it's cool. I'll get on, even to this day, I'll work on commercial sets where the people on there know my mom from like 20 plus years ago. I'm like, hey, how's your mom doing? Or how's your uncle? And like, it's super cool to have that sort of connection that goes way back. And even people that I worked with in set deck, they're like, hey man, like, good. Like, you're doing well. Like, good to see you on the thing. And I've had some moments come full circle, some moments with like bosses who have been, by the way, shout out to bosses who let you go to auditions and stuff. That's really important. Know those bosses and know those coworkers who support you, because I've had them, and so grateful. I worked on The Magicians, and the set decorator was my old boss. And I got set and I was in full wardrobe. And she came up to me with like tears in her eyes, and she was very proud. And she was like a second mom to me for years. I spent hundreds and hundreds of hours with her. And that was just a really special thing to have that come full circle. And I cherish those moments, and I have to express gratitude and be appreciative of that. So
I want to touch on something that you mentioned about understanding that you are not the most important person on the set. And that is really something. I'm not saying that actors automatically think that they are the most important person, but it takes experience to understand the roles on a set.
Yeah.
Because it's not like any other experience. It's not like any other job, really. And it takes a while to figure it out. And you will make mistakes at the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
Thinking that, I'll give you an example. The first network credit I ever got was Empire, and I was a co-star. It was a very small, I had a few lines, one scene, played a paramedic. You know, there's all these moving parts, you know, hundreds of people, and it's a quick scene, a quick, easy scene. And afterwards, I went up to the director, and I had never met him besides being in the audition, and he asked me a couple of questions. And I went up to him, and I said, thank you so much for this opportunity. This has really meant a lot to me. And he looked at me like, who are you? Like, yeah. I don't know who you are. And he was like, he gave me this, and you know, no fault to him at all. He had a job to do. And I was a very, very small piece of that entire puzzle. And it was just kind of like, he didn't really have time for that. He didn't really have time to be talking to me. And you just have to understand that. You have to learn those lessons.
But I think, yeah, I mean, speaking of that, I still think that was the right thing to do on your behalf, because what maybe you could have done, I don't know how you approached it, when he said he didn't know who you were, but you could have been like, if you, and again, this would have come from experience, like you knew, if you knew kind of how small the part was, and then you go up, you're like, hey, my name's Lee. I played the paramedic just in the last scene. This is my first time and on set is one of my big first roles. And I just want to appreciate the thing. Then you've been, oh, he has the context now.
Right.
Versus like you could have been like a PA who like forgot his coffee. Like, who the fuck are you? Like, right. Kind of thing. Right. You know, but like if you approach it with that, like I make a point of doing that when I'm on sets, especially with commercials too. Usually in commercials, there's a room that's separate from the set where all the producers can watch the footage without worry of people like overhearing what they're saying. Because let's be honest, they're paying for this whole thing. So they got to talk about what they're doing candidly. But I'll go find that room and ask an AD or like guide me there. When I leave, I'll be like, hey, like, thanks guys for letting me be here. Thanks for the opportunity. And usually they're super grateful. Oh yeah. Cause they've been watching you all day.
Mm-hmm.
You're like a TV star come to life. Cause now you're in the room with them. And I just do that, whether or not that does anything. I think it just kind of ties together your experience because it can become so numb. Like this guy's watching a million things, the director, your director you're talking about. And like, I don't know who these people are, but like, he's got to remember that you're a person too, you know? And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, but yeah, I think it would be being specific about that and being, hey, I just tell these things and this is where I am. And like, that's my experience. And I just want to let you know. And like, if he's an asshole, well, fuck him. Like,
right. Yeah.
And then probably never meet him again. So whatever.
Right. Yeah. So I want to talk about what are some of the lessons that you learned from being a set decorator, being on set, watching the actors. What specific like acting techniques did you pick up, if any? Or maybe you saw people making mistakes and you're like, oh, fuck, okay, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah. You mean watching like me watching actors?
Yes.
On set deck versus everything. You know, I mean, for the most part, there's not a ton other than like the obvious things of just not knowing your lines. Like if you show up and you don't know stuff, like that is a problem. You got to know that stuff. And then not being there fully for your scene partners. Like, I think to me that I sense that, I mean, whether or not it's ever going to be spoken about on, they're ever going to address it. But like, you know, when they're doing the master and then they do coverage on you, maybe they do your coverage first and then they go back to the other person. And like, if you, to see actors who like don't give their full attention, their full performance, because like acting is reacting, it's coming off the other person. And if they're kind of half-assing it, well, the camera's not on me, like, fuck you, I don't need to. Like, then the person, their performance is not going to be as good. Like, and some people don't understand that. Like, you still have to be there. It's completing the whole thing. I think that's a really valuable thing. When I've been on Supernatural a couple times, and the guys on there are so great. And there was one really emotional scene where, the coverage was complicated. I like stand up and I go up and go to the door turn. So there's a lot of camera angles, and they being the pros that they are, Jensen and Jared, they're like, hey, do like, they're like, okay, let's start it from the ADs or the scripty. I guess the director was yelling out, okay, let's start from this line and go from there. Well, like, there's this whole emotional scope that I just went through. And then they kind of pull rank, like, no, like, we'll go back. We'll go way back. And they are kind enough to be like, we'll go back like far enough in the scene that we build up to that point. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, that's awesome. And everyone's just like, yep, sure. That's what we're doing. If that takes like two more minutes, that's what we're doing. And like, they knew, not just being like a quality scene partners, but they know that that's going to get the best result. And that was really like, I was really gracious. Like, after they could have been told you, like, let's, you know, pick it up. We're done. They haven't seen us, or they've shot our stuff. Let's move on. But they were like, no, for you and for our scene, like, we're going to give you the respect of the scene, that of everything you need. So I guess my point in all that is like being an attentive scene partner. And that's where theater comes in for me, because there is all that technical stuff can remove you from this process. But if in theater, like, well, you're on stage with you're right across the other person, like, the whole, there's no cameras catching certain angles. Like, you got to be there the whole time. So you better.
Right. So
that's what's helpful for me. Yeah.
Yeah. I just want to clarify, in case there are people who don't quite understand and they're trying to picture this. In TV and film, if two people are having a conversation, there's often what's called, I don't know the technical term, but an over the shoulder shot or whatever. So let's say I'm in a scene with Brendan, and half the time they're filming my face, and usually what it'll be like, his shoulder and like the side of his head will be in the shot. And if you have not been in a situation like that in acting, and you've just seen it on TV, you often don't even realize what you're looking at. You've seen it so many times in everything you've ever watched that you don't even see it. But that's just a classic shot that is in every TV show and every film, yep, over the shoulder. And so if Brendan is on screen and they're shooting it, I know that my face is not on screen during that shot. I know that. I know that they're not filming me. And so there's the question, especially for new actors, well, what am I supposed to do here? Am I supposed to just feed lines? I mean, it doesn't matter. I'm not being filmed. Or am I supposed to go all in like I am being filmed? And you may think, well, that's kind of stupid. Like, are they going to think I'm stupid because I'm really like giving it all I got because I'm not being filmed? Maybe people will look at me and think, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. Just feed the lines. And you might not know. You literally might not know what you're supposed to do. And what what you want to do is you want to be all in, because it's helping the person who is on screen. That is the correct way to do it. You want to be as if you are on camera. Give it everything that you would give as if you were on camera.
Exactly. Yeah. It's I can totally see. Yeah. It's worth clarifying that, because you know that. And by the way, I think it's just called a close up, whether or not it's over the shoulder or not, because sometimes it's called a dirty close up and sometimes it's clean. And that makes a difference, because a dirty close up means you're catching a piece of the shoulder and maybe the side of someone's head. And a clean close up is like still that person's perspective, but there's no other person, so that you're totally out of the screen. And yeah, you might, I think that's fair to think like, well, I know the camera's literally over my shoulder right now. Like, I'm not in the shot. Do I need to be there? Well, that's not your job to worry about that shit. You, like, that's the director, that's the filmmakers. Their job is to make this film. Your job is to be in the scene, is to fulfill the story as your character. So if you're coming out of a store and you meet someone on a sidewalk and you yell at them, and then you like, just do that. Like, worry about that. They'll tell you, like, if you're on screen or not on screen. It is not, whether or not you are on screen has nothing to do with the intensity or quality of your acting. It has nothing to do with it. If you are being a responsible actor, you're engaging your scene part. Like, if you just picture what this is, the scene is a moment in someone's lives, whether it's imaginary or not. These are real people or not, doesn't matter. Like, that's what's happening. There happen to be cameras around. Catching them. So, like, you wouldn't, in this conversation right now, you and me talking, like, we're not worried about a camera watching us, how we're interacting with each other. Like, that's just not a thing. Uh-huh. So, you know, engage fully and do what's in the script. That's your fucking job. Like, uh-huh. don't Don't worry about that stuff. If you're concerned about where you should be set, it's good to be like an attentive actor. Like, you know, can I be over here? Like, should I be, you know, where you might stand and stuff like that. But I'm telling you, if you're in a scene and like you would want someone to be there for you, like how about when you go into auditions? Like, what's the worst when you have a reader who's not like an actor mm-hmm. or, you know, someone who isn't there again, you're like, dude, like I spent all night on this. I ran scenes. Like I went all balls to the wall on this scene. And then now like, you're just kind of feeding me. Push through and you gotta like, I got more to create in your head to like make this good. And yes, that is your job, but like make it easier on yourself.
Right.
Like have someone, when people are fully engaged, like it's just, it's more fun. It's like, it's literally what we're there to do versus right. like try to like to worry about the technical aspect of it. Like, fuck that. Like just do your job. Do your fucking job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before we continue, you don't have an accent. Is that on purpose?
Thank you. well, it is partially. I mean, growing up, so West Coast, I don't know if you know, is kind of a, like it crosses borders, like the accent from California, like all the way up in larger cities is really similar, like from California, Oregon, Washington, Vancouver. We all just kind of sound the same. I don't know why that is, but I've also just being in the industry long enough, I'm aware, and I watch a lot of TV and sort of what got me into it. You know, when you're young, you imitate actors, you impressions, you notice things. And I happen to have an ear for that. And I've just adapted to it because it is really easy, a lot easier. I mean, almost all auditions I get say like standard American accent. Mm-hmm. That's what we use. So, but also to that, the stereotype of Canadian accents is just that there are, I mean, there are accents for sure, but they're limited largely to like East Coast and smaller towns. I mean, if you even just think of the regions, like sort of like the North Dakota, like Minnesota accent, like yeah. it's kind of blends into Canada a little bit. And yeah, there are some accents like Maritimes, it starts to get really mm-hmm. crazy. Like there's a show called Canada's Worst Driver. It's on like TLC or something like that. And the host is from somewhere in the Maritimes. And he's like, Julie's having trouble parking her car at side of the bar. He's finding it very hard. And I'm like, oh my gosh. through this anymore. Yeah. Listen to.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I don't want to do that. Thank you. I'm not going to be that guy.
Yeah. I'm from, this is actually an important point. And sometimes I talk to people who find me through the podcast or whatever. And I don't bullshit them. If I hear an accent, I'm like, first and foremost, you need to get rid of that accent. That's not going to help you at all.
Yeah.
And I'm from Minnesota and I was born in the capital. And so I was born in a big city and I lived in a big city my whole life. And it's much more likely to not have much of an accent if you were born in the city. But I have friends who were born in the city as well, and they have a really, really strong accent. And it wasn't really till I moved to Chicago like 5 or 6 years ago that I was able to hear it even more. Like I would talk to my parents after living in Chicago for like a year, and I was like, holy shit, you guys have like a serious accent. And I never knew it. And I purposely, sometimes there are still words that I say differently than other people, but I purposely had to make an effort to get rid of that accent, because how many roles are there for someone with a Minnesotan accent? None.
Yeah. Other than, my character in Supernatural was from Minnesota. So I have a tinge of that in there, but they didn't want it too hard. But then there's like Fargo. My character had a French accent. If you watch the clip and the demo, but it's kind of, cause it was like a movie within the movie, but those characters, like that was like one of the first distinct accents that I can remember like imitating back in the day when I watched like Frances McDormand in the first Fargo movie. And she's like, yeah, real good. And we're like, it's so distinct and so funny. But that accent, like you're saying, like it suits those characters and those people alone. Like it would be weird if they had a standard American accent. So, but yeah, to your point, it is better just to start as best you can with a standard American accent, wherever you're from. I mean, there's a lot of accents in the States, but if you can really pull off the what's called a standard American accent, it's just the most versatile. And you might struggle if you can't do that.
Yeah. And start working on it now. I mean, you're not going to be able to do it overnight. So
no,
start to try to get rid of your accent, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever it is.
There's a lot of good coaches out there. There's a lot, if you look and make it part of your training, if it's something that's important to you, like it should be important to you, but yeah, find some good coaches. The dialect coaches, a couple good ones in Vancouver here. And a lot of them do Skype coaching too. So don't let that worry you. If you find one that you like, I remember David Larigny, he was the dialect coach on Fargo and he coached all of the actors. Pretty much all of them had Fargo accents and he helped us our scene where we had like Parisian French accents. He was really good. I'd give him a shout out. Tony Alcantar is a local dialect coach here. There's a couple of, there's a few just that I know of, but I mean, you should in your field find people who can do that. And if you can't, you know, look around. The internet is a helpful place. Uh-huh. And like I said, I'm sure these places are more than happy to do Skype coaching and something like that versus like scene study is harder to do over that. But dialect coaching, for sure, you can do Skyping, for sure.
Yeah. I just want to interrupt this this episode for a second and let the listeners know that if you guys like this podcast and you're enjoying this episode, it would be awesome if you would take a screenshot on your phone of this podcast, of this episode playing, and post on Instagram and tag me. I'm Lee Foster 123. My first name is L-E-I-G-H, in case you don't know that. And also tag Brendan. Brendan, what's your handle?
Yeah, mine is Mr. Brendan Taylor, M-R Brendan Taylor on Instagram. Yeah, please do. It'd be great.
And I will give everyone a personal thank you on the next episode for whoever does that. Thank you so much. All right, moving on. So you have a very subtle acting style. Have you heard that before? Do you agree with that?
I've actually never heard that before. You're the first to kind of to identify it in that way. Yeah.
Well, here's how I would explain it. And again, I encourage everyone to go to your website and watch your reels. And specifically, I'm talking about commercials. Don't get me wrong. I think that what you are doing in your commercial acting and your TV and film acting, from what I've seen, works perfectly. Okay. Mm. I am not saying that you do one technique that is a catch-all at all. Mm. I think you're really good. And I think that what you do works really well. In, what I would say is that in a number of the scenes, you don't move your body at all.
Yeah.
All the acting basically is taking place in your face and it works super well. Do you know where you developed that?
Yeah, so that makes sense. To be totally clear and honest, that was a big work in progress. I learned to do that, to really embrace that, because the tendency, I think, for me when I was younger and learning, and actors in general, is that you have to do something in order to tell the story. I have to move my hands. I have to open my eyes. I have to, like, it's this, like, separating real life from acting. Like, you have to, well, there's like living and then like, oh, if I'm on camera, then I have to be doing something. Like, that is a common thing that I'm sure any acting teacher will shut down immediately. But I worked a lot with my teachers on stillness. Stillness is powerful in acting. It definitely helps you learn it quickly, also for TV and film, because think of it, if you're in an extreme close-up, the camera's, you know, just kind of, you got a few inches above your chin and your forehead. Well, think of that image on like a big screen in a movie. If you turn your head, it's like this like big like movement, you know, like through the air, because it's this giant object that's moving. So like that just simple example, like you got to know to dial that back. And they might ask you to, and in auditions too, there's certain styles and certain shows where they just ask you to dial. Because like I'm known sometimes I'll go a bit far and then like, okay, you reel it back. So it's better to have the ability to go far and mm-hmm. with your performance and then know how to dial it back to get that. But, and when it comes to comedy, I think it's just, my experience and my influences in comedy, and that just kind of works. Like, a good example is like Steve Carell in The Office. I mean, I love him to death, and he's really like, sometimes like he's so tragic as an actor, you know, it's like he's such a sad man, and so Michael Scott, but he'll make some expressions and his face lights up, or that, like he has a lot of those moments where, especially the floating head parts where they're sitting in the interview parts in that show, a lot of those, like, they're all just sitting there, they're not moving around, and they're just kind of talking. You can learn a lot if you pay attention to like the things that these people do. But I think it stems from like my sense of humor as well. This is something that I learned kind of recently, or observed, is that me growing up, my friends and I, we would always try to find what's funny. Like, we would watch things and discuss what's funny and argue what's funny and not. And we'd all watch the same things. I grew up with The Simpsons, like the golden age of The Simpsons. Like, that's, to me, is like near and dear to my heart, and has to do, like, it's formed my sense of humor. And Mel Brooks movies and Looney Tunes and all these things. And I just kind of assumed that everyone else did that, but like what they found was funny was different. And then I learned that, like, oh no, like maybe people didn't do that. They didn't focus on things that were funny, and comedy wasn't such a big thing. So having such a, like, a deep background in like comedy and what's important to me. And that started with imitating actors and just being really involved in that. That really helped my sense of humor, and that's sort of where it sort of led me. I think it's just, I'm just very observant about what I think is funny in certain shows. And a good example, like a simple example, is, and then we can talk about this later in sort of what is good with how to be successful in like commercials. But if you think of the beats in a Roadrunner cartoon, Wile E. Coyote and Roadrunner, and the times were like, Roadrunner will like run off an edge, and then like he's floating on the edge, and he stares and looks at the camera, and he looks down, and he looks back at the camera, and he kind of shrugs, and then he goes down. Like, all those like beats, like, that's funny. He's super still, or like when, I don't know, when he gets like covered in tar and then covered in feathers, and then his eyes like pop out of the feathers. It's just kind of still, like, that's funny. Like, even like you picturing that right now is funny, rather than someone like reacting to the falling, like freaking out because they're off a cliff. Like, those little beats, I think, are just funny because we know, like, how, like, they're just kind of resigned to the fact that they're like fucked over. Right. Like, to me, that's funnier than like a big like clowny reaction.
Right.
So like I kind of tie that into things, because like in life things are funny. Like, you'll see someone on the bus or do something, just one little movement, and you'll chuckle and go, like, that was really funny, you know what I mean? Like, it's rarely in life is it like something super clowny or showy that like makes you like chuckle, laugh. It's usually like a little subtle thing that someone said or a little movement. Like, that's where I come from in my
life. It's like, yeah, it's the absence of anything that is funny.
Yeah, absence of things, and like one thing to think about is editing as well, and how that contributes to comedy in TV and film as well as commercials. One director that really is influential and I think is great at it is Edgar Wright. So Scott Pilgrim versus the World, The World's End, Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, Baby Driver. Scott Pilgrim is a really good example of how he uses editing. There's a really good YouTube video about Edgar Wright and how he uses the medium of film and editing in comedy. Things like the enter and pop in and out of the frame. Like, when you have someone standing there and someone kind of like comes into the frame and like, you know, they're right in your face, like using the medium of the screen of the frame and quick cuts editing, and sort of as like when they all get drunk and they all like slam back three beers in like 1 second, like boom, 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 like they're slamming beers or whatever. All of those things really help too, but that you can learn a lot from comedy, like why those things are funny too. Quick cuts and subtle things lead to that. So yeah, those are my recommendations.
So you talked about stillness and how that is that's an asset in auditioning as well as in on set. What are some of the other things that you can think of that you think of being assets in auditioning? Specific things that you do you know, things that, like, maybe you'd think of like your, not, I don't want to say bag of tricks, but like your techniques that you know work and that you use again and again.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a few different things depending on what it is that you are doing. I wouldn't say like a bag of tricks is a good thing to have, but there are definite things that I keep in mind, like going in to rooms, like, just being real is really important. Like being, when you understand that what you're doing is collaborative and not a test, they're not there to test you on how good you are. Cause it, we all feel that pressure. I still feel that pressure and I should take my own advice. But when you kind of get to a point where you're, hey, let's make this thing together. Like, what is it that we can do? That when you start from that place, it just makes everything easier. So yeah, when you might go into the room and be like, okay, like what, I'm going to do it like this. And then, you might talk about it after. And I thought it was more like this, like think of it from the casting perspective. Casting just wants their job to be really easy, right? Like if everyone came in and blew it out of the park and somehow knew exactly what it is that they're on, holy shit, all of these people are great. All of these guys, these women, how do we choose? Well, like they're in the best position. So they go over to the client or the producers or directors and they're like, good luck. Good luck finding someone because they're all great. Like that's their best position to be. So their job is to get you to really get what it is that they're going after. So why not make it easy on yourself to just collaborate and make figure out what it is you want? So when it comes to commercials, be real, go in the room, you're not like putting on a show, like faster on the smile, and you walk in the room and how, like, just, I don't know, like, hey guys, like we're doing, like, and you know, ask questions. Don't be afraid to ask, like, okay, there might be in commercials especially, is okay, first you start here and then you pick up the fake box, mime the bot, and then you walk over here and you wave to the people. Like, if you didn't get that, ask again. Like, they don't want to blow a take.
Yeah.
So just be like, you know, okay, wait, so I go here and then I go over here and then you want that my eye line, is it like, be clear where the eye lines are. Like, are they over here? They're like, am I allowed to talk in this audition or not? That's a big one. Sometimes they use silent on camera ones and just, they want you to, it's just about what we're seeing. Okay, fair enough. Then you know that you can work within that. But like, if you're allowed to like a couple of lines, yeah, why not react to things? Right? Yeah. And be like, just ask all those things to, so that you don't blow a take. So you didn't, like, you'd be really clear about those things.
It also shows confidence. It shows, shows experience and confidence. If you have the confidence to ask a question, especially if it's a question that makes sense. I mean, in situations in life, if you are confident and you don't understand what somebody says, you just say, sorry, I didn't catch that. Tell me, explain that again. And people don't go, fuck you. Get out of here. You didn't understand what I said. Fuck you. Get out of here. You know, they'll be like, oh yeah, yeah. They appreciate the fact that you ask for clarity.
Sure. Yeah. As it should. It does. Yeah. Be clear that casting is not going to think less of you because you're trying to be clear on what it is they want from you.
Yeah.
Like, don't get it twisted. Like, that's not, if anything, they're like, they know that, like, at least they just said the instruction, and then by you repeating it, like, okay, that person actually heard what came out of my mouth. Because the amount of actors is going to, like, not do that.
Yeah.
They're going to be in the room, and they'll be like, and they, like, turn around, and they don't know what they're doing. They're like, why did you just do that? Like, in their mind, they're like, what the fuck is wrong with this guy? Why is, like, I just said the thing, and he didn't do the thing. It might be that you're nervous. Sure, all those things. But it helps to get rid of the nerves when your thought isn't like, okay, you said this and I don't remember, like, did I go here or here? Like, oh, I don't know. Oh, they're about to roll. Okay, here we go. Mm-hmm. Just ask. Like, be clear, be confident with that, and be positive. Like, in some of these, I mean, we might get to that a bit later about, like, non-speaking roles. I mean, I have some stuff to say in that, but like sell yourself, like sell yourself positively. I mean, you know, don't belittle yourself, like, be a confident person. And like that's what's helped me a lot in the room. And then, you know, more specifically with me, like improv, when it comes to comedy stuff, like when you are ready and present and you can listen, react, and like improv skills really help. I've never done improv training specifically, a ton of it, but it's been a big part of my theater training, and we would use it as a tool when rehearsing plays and stuff like that. So I'm comfortable with that. And sometimes I prefer improv. Like when they're like, oh, let's just like try it, figure something else out. I mean, like sometimes that gives me freedom to like, oh, I don't have the pressure of the prepared script. Mm-hmm. I know the circumstances. I know what's happening here. So let's just go. Let's do it. Mm-hmm. So it's good to be at that place.
There's a term that people may or may not know, and it's a button. And a button in commercial acting is usually something that comes at the end of a commercial that is either made up by the actor or it's written in, and it buttons up the commercial. And so if you think about a commercial, usually comedy, you'll have the commercial, then it'll be, you know, let's say it's for McDonald's or something, and you have the scene of the commercial, and then it'll be the advertisement. So it'll be like, now at McDonald's, come in and get this for $1, whatever, all through Tuesday. And then it'll cut back for like one line to the actor where they say one thing and it buttons it up. Usually it's a funny thing that kind of wraps the whole thing up. So my question for you is, are you prepared? Do you have buttons prepared for commercial auditions ahead of time?
That's a really good question. So yeah, buttons are generally better for commercial auditions. That I've definitely used them in comedic TV and film auditions too. They're useful when it comes to having kind of the last thing to say. And that's kind of what it is. It's like you have the last laugh, you have the last line. You might as well. But you just have to be clear that you understand, you have a pretty good vibe of like what this whole thing is about with the scene. So like don't rewrite the script for people. Like then you're insulting them, right? But when you throw a button on the end that's in the same vein of, say, like it's scripted in the commercial audition that you have a button, like, and you say something that's really similar to that, but your own take, it just shows that you get the whole circumstance. Mm-hmm. So, but to that point, I have prepared some buttons before, and sometimes you come up with them on the spot. But it is worthy and worth knowing when it's appropriate. And I think you develop that over time. But if the spot ever ends with sort of your line or a reaction, like an action reaction, like someone saying something, like even if it doesn't end on your line, you might still have a reaction to it. And thinking back to like, you know, basic acting training, like you came from a place, something happens, and now you're going somewhere else. Like if you think through that, like, what is it that we just went through all this with these characters, what is it that they're doing now? Like, where are they going? How would this be taken further? That's where you sort of, you're allowed to kind of have good buttons. So, I mean, I have some examples of ones that have really worked where I've literally booked auditions because of the buttons that I've done, or just improved with what they've had. And you can see some of them in the commercial demo I have on my site. But so one of the biggest commercials I did was this Doritos commercial that was on my called When Pigs Fly. That was a Super Bowl commercial. And that was a contest where you submitted a commercial. That was a fan-made, basic or amateur-made commercial that won, made it through the contest, and we aired at the 2015 Super Bowl. That was a pretty huge deal for me, and that's kind of a whole other story, but it's a really, really cool one. But when we made that, it was, you know, I was there on a morning out in the farmland, sort of, you know, a good hour from where I live. In the commercial, just to give you a rundown, you guys remember, as a farmer, I'm the farmer leaning on my tractor, eating a bag of Doritos. Little kid comes up, says, can I have a Dorito? I'm like, when pigs fly, and kind of a passing comment. He takes it literally, goes back to the barn, takes his pet pig, stays up all night, and like straps a rocket onto his pig. And he comes back, is like, hey, Ralph, and he hits the button, and out of the barn shoots this pig on a rocket. It flies over their head, and my hat's knocked off, and then we're just watching it fly off into the distance. And then I turn to him and I say, like, I have the bag of Doritos, and I just, in awe, looking up in the sky, just hand it to him and say, take it.
Yeah.
And I give him the whole bag. Now, that was an improv or alternate thing that I did in the moment. Like, we had some other things where, like, okay, like, and if you understand the arc of that story, so I'm eating one chip at a time. He just wants one chip. What's funny is he takes it to the extreme, does this elaborate thing and comes back and expects one chip. Well, obviously he went above and beyond. I'm just fucking take the whole bag, kid. Like, I think, you know what I mean? Like, that's the vibe. So that's what's funny about it. And that just worked perfectly with it.
There was I was on a commercial back when I was still in Minnesota. It was for Best Buy. I was an extra, and they had flown in a guy from LA. He was a comedian. He had a comedy background. And at this time, I don't even think I knew what a button was. And he had a few lines that were scripted, and then he was putting buttons on the end. And the director, every take, would just go, "Great, give me something else. And it was like 15 or 20 takes, and the director just kept being like, "That was really good. Yeah, just keep give me something else next time. Give me something else." Sure. I was like, "Holy shit! If somebody was not prepared," and the dude handled it like it was impressive. But I just remember thinking, "Wow!" So that is really the skill that booked that guy that job, because anybody could do the lines. The line was not hard to do. Come in to Best Buy and blah, 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 get this.
Yeah.
And the skill was in the fact that he was able to add something that was adding to the commercial. Totally.
Yeah. And that's, and I kind of do the same thing now. I will, if I feel like I suss out the room and get that these people are open to it. You got to understand that these writers, the people that make these, like, sometimes they're really creative. Sometimes they're just kind of lazy and they have like one idea and they really want the actor to like bring them ideas. And this happens a lot in commercials. They bring you. So like, if they can find actors who get the vibe and again, come and are funny and are basically doing their story, like these little scripts are little stories that they're trying to tell. If you're kind of doing things in the same realm, they're like, okay, like we can work with him. Like we might want to offer things. The directors are like, well, I want to look good in front of the clients. Yeah. So I want to like be able to show different things. If the client's like, that joke's kind of stale. Like we don't really like that anymore. Like what else can we do? And then they've hired people who like did like one thing. Like, that's not good. But if you can show in the room that you've like thought of other things and like they might take it in a different direction, then like that's a good style. Like,
yeah. When it comes to comedy and when it comes to improv in auditions, you have to understand the script. If you don't understand the script, don't improv.
Yeah.
That's what I would say. I mean, if you don't understand the script, you should probably figure out the script. Like that's number one. Like try to figure out the script. And if you don't, maybe ask somebody. I've done that. I've had plenty of comedy auditions and TV auditions where I'm like, I don't get this. Like what is it this or is it this? Like it's down to two maybe. I'm like, is this, especially when it's like one line and you're like, do you think they mean this or does it mean this? Like, is he, you know what I'm saying? And I'll ask people, I'll call my brother, I'll send the script to a few people. Like, what do you think about this? Is this, you know, but first and foremost, if you're going to improv, you need to understand what is going on. Otherwise you won't be able to do it unless you just get really lucky.
And do not like, don't ramble either.
Yes. That's what I was going to say. Don't push it.
No. In improv, if you start to like, there's that nervous thing. Oh, I got to keep talking. Like, no, man, like, less is more in that case. Like it's not showing that you can improv and keep talking. It's showing that you kind of don't know when to shut up. And like,
yeah,
that's, I would say that like, that's my experience in the room of the people who ramble on in the improv scenarios. It's not good.
Well, the other thing is it's unusable and it shows a lack of experience because you don't realize that it's unusable, because when it comes to commercials, commercials are like 15 seconds or 30 seconds long. They're not 17 seconds.
No,
there are no commercials that are 17 seconds. Okay. So if you're in a 15 second spot, your improv, you have about one word that you could maybe improv. If you improv a sentence, that is a third of the length of the commercial. And immediately the directors are going to go, okay, even though that was funny, this person obviously does not realize the way the commercials work.
Yeah. So again, in the alternates, if you are improvising or something different, if it's written like a, you know, it's like four or five words or like some little catch for like, I guess I shouldn't have done that. Like if that's like the line, like then your other line would be like, oh, what an idiot or something. Yeah. I don't know, like something, you know, that is at similar length and sort of sharpness and statement as that one line. So then, so now it's coming to like understanding script, like understanding the power of script, like all of these things are useful to know, like those, when things are just a couple of sentences, like, why is it that way? Like what, how is this different if it's just one sentence versus a whole paragraph? Like, why did he just say the one thing? Why did he ramble on? Like it, you know, like these things all serve the character. That's why I like one-liners in TV and film. They're not one paragraphers. They're one liners, like for a reason, because they push the story along for a certain reason. You know, knowing, and then on those notes and that note on one liners, like know your purpose, know that, that just do that. And it's not about you. It's about pushing the story for the main characters.
Like, absolutely.
Yeah.
I want to ask you a couple of questions that you may not know the answer to, but because you've been in so many commercials and on so many sets, you may know the answers. The first one is, so here's a perfect example. You and I were actually both on hold for commercials today that we both didn't get, which will actually bring us to another point later, which is about...
different commercials, by the way, not the same.
Yeah, not the same. Yeah, not the same. We're going to talk later about thinking that you got something big and then you didn't, or you get cut out. We're going to talk about that later. But so I found out last night at 5 p.m. that I did not get the commercial that was going to shoot today. And you were waiting for me to tell you whether or not we were going to do this interview because I didn't know until 5. Okay. Now, something that has always kind of confused me and I've always wondered about is that there is sometimes millions of dollars behind these commercials, behind one commercial. Okay. And there are, you know, hundreds of moving parts, which I totally understand. But my question is, why does it come down to the last second so often? Why are they making changes to the script the morning of? Why are they picking actors the night before? It seems like if there's so much money driving this thing, why isn't it just planned better?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I'm sure everyone thinks about that. And there's, in my estimation, I haven't made a commercial, so I don't know, but I've been around them a lot. And I can tell you a few educated guesses why that is. Yeah, they are investing millions of dollars in these commercials for sure. And sometimes it just comes down to because they're last minute, they want to be absolutely sure that it's right. So you would think doing that in planning ahead of time, if you planned ahead, but there are so many things, like there's the locations, there's like getting these other actors, there's you and the other actor. And it's not just about you. Like it could have been the woman playing your wife she's at a conflict and they only want you guys together. So if she's not available, then you're not available. Like they just don't want it. Or a lot of times if you're with kids, they got to put the kids first because they're just like, kids are harder to work with. They can be like younger kids, you know, they just, are they going to shit the bed? Are they, you know, are they not quite skilled enough or they don't know how to listen? Like they got to work with these. Okay. Like I can really work with this kid. So now let's pair up a mom and dad that look good together. So it's just so many things that you will never know why that is, but largely it is availability of other actors. It is availability of locations. It is weather permitting. I've booked things, gone to set, gone to wardrobe, and they're like, yeah, it's starting to snow, so we can't do this anymore. Sorry. I'm like, well, shit. You know, I've had some, yeah, I mean, trust me. And if anyone knows the frustration of that, I do. I've had the amount of times that I put on hold, waiting to hear about something else, waiting, putting my life on hold, putting on I mean, I had one for a huge company last year. I was put on hold for 8 days. I did a second callback in that time. I was going to Portugal or Spain at the end of that week. This is last year. I'm like, anytime, guys, you want to tell me. Like, I don't know how you don't know this by now, but I was leaving on the Friday, like, did that second callback, just me in the room, a Skype callback, a shot in Toronto, big U.S. national commercial. I was like, okay, this would be great, but I have this commercial, I have this trip I'm going on. Monday goes by, Tuesday goes by, Wednesday, it's Thursday, the day before I leave. I'm like, I call my agent, I'm like, look, they need to tell me now, because I need to know if I need to cancel my flight or not and do this. And sure enough, I got an email immediately back. They're like, oh yeah, you're released.
Yeah.
So whether or not it was that ultimatum that they're like, well, he's not going to be around. Well, fuck him. Like, we don't want him anyway. Or I was in a list of like 6, 7, 8 other guys, and I was still kind of in the mix. And meanwhile, this commercial is still shooting recently. They would have had to fly me out. You know, I was in the mix and they're like, who's that again? Oh yeah, no, we're not using him anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it could have been that, but they have the right or to hold you, whatever that means, which is kind of a mysterious thing in itself. Trust me, I'm still trying to figure that out. Like, how many people are on hold? Are 20 people on hold? Is it down to me and 2 people?
Yeah.
Am I shortlisted? Am I pinned? Like, all these bullshit terms. And like, I just tell me or not, man. Like, trust me, I know the frustration, but there are just so many. And when it comes to commercials specifically, there are so many chefs in the kitchen. There are the clients and all the people. So like the company, the client for those out there is the company. So if you're doing Doritos, then that's the client. But then they have like the marketing person, the product person, all those people they fly in. And then the agency, the client hires the agency to make them a commercial. Like, we don't make commercials. We make potato chips. We make us a commercial. So then they hire the agency who makes the decisions around that in regards to that. And there, the agency hires the production crew and the director, and they bring all those in. So the director has, like, these are the actors. I can work with these people. And there's the agency is like, well, you know, this is going to be a good look for you, or you have this type of person, or you might want mixes of ethnicities, or you might want younger people, older people. You want this, the house to be modern, the house to be more middle class. They're the ones who make all that. And the client's like, okay, yes or no, because they're paying for all this stuff. And then, but they're ultimately like, well, I don't want Doritos to be associated with XYZ or this type of person or this type of job, blah, blah, blah. So if you think of all those jobs, there's so many people who have something to say. And, you know, like, this is so many things. I remember I was on hold for this huge alcohol commercial and had all these like huge stars in it. Like, yeah, it had like Javier Bardem and like Chris Pine, like and Tim Meadows, and I don't know, some other, I can't remember. And I was like, I found that out after the fact, and I was on hold, and it was one of those like cattle call ones. You're like, I didn't really do anything special. They're like, oh, sweet. Okay. Went to the callback, waited days. And I happened to know someone on the other, on the production side. I've known him for a long time, and he was in the room and he was like texting me like, hey man, like, you're still in the mix. You're at the top of the list. And like, cool. That's awesome. Like, sure. Like, I hope to hear. It's like, next day he's like, man, you're still there. Like, I kind of wish I didn't know at this point, cause he's like,
sure.
Stuff. And then sure enough, like, I was like, yo, you'll find out tomorrow. And then like come Saturday, they're deciding on Saturday. I didn't get an email. Why? What happened? Turns out the director threw all of the choices out. They had lined up like 6 people all to be in the spot. And he's just like, no, starting fresh. I want a whole new group of people. Who knows why? Like, yeah. I will never know why. But it's one of those things where like, there I had some inside information that I was going to get it. And then I was at the top of the list, whatever list or pyramid, I don't know. And then I didn't get it. And they're like, well, why? What did I do? Well, you can start to go down that rabbit hole, which is not a wise place to go. And I was just like, I just moved on and I did other things. So it's a brutal industry like that. But to like kind of answer your question, like, it's just so many factors. So and we'll probably talk about this later, but in my opinion, it's arrogant to think that you know why you didn't get a job. Like, you don't know anything what's going on behind the scenes. Like, when you think it's because you're too this or too tall or too skinny or you screwed up or you screwed up the lines. How many times have you done an audition where you're like, oh, I fucked that up. You get a call back. You're like, what? You know what I mean? There's so many things. There's so many factors going on that you just don't know and don't pretend to know and just move on. And you can ask for feedback sometimes, like sometimes for TV and film. That's a wise thing to do for those out there listening, like especially your first kind of auditions. Wait a couple days. Like, don't like leave the audition and email your agent to call them an hour later, but a day or two and be like, hey, like, what'd you do? And they might give you some feedback on it. That's useful. But you don't know why you didn't get a job. You just don't. There are so many reasons behind that.
Yeah. And that is what you're talking about when that's called going down the rabbit hole.
Yeah.
When you're like, oh, was it this? Or maybe it was this. Or, oh, fuck, I probably fucked that up. I'm sure it was that. That is, that's a dangerous place to be. I was on, and this will actually tie into, talking about getting released from big roles and stuff and that kind of stuff. But I had a recurring role on Chicago Fire, and I originally, it was going to be 3 episodes. And then it got turned into 4 episodes. By the time I had shot the first one, I got a call. I shot the first one, got a call. They said, you're going to be in 4. Shot the second one and then got cut out of the next 2. My story just ended. I was just written off. And my agent said, you know, this is really normal. Like, this happens a lot. Basically, on these TV shows, they start a bunch of stories and then they just don't have enough room for them. And so they end up cutting them and the audience doesn't realize. The audience, or maybe they do, the audience does realize, but it's just such a normal part of these TV shows, especially the ones that are just like, you know, go on and on, 7 seasons and counting or whatever. They'll start stories and they're just like, we don't really have time for that. We're just going to drop that one. And it's just written off. And to this day, I think about a mistake that I made on that second episode, which I was very new and I started over a shot and there was a shitload of extras. It was a big production and I stopped a shot because I screwed up the lines. I obviously know now that that was not the correct thing to do. And the actor who was in the scene with me leaned over and was like, you know, next time that happens, just like, keep going. Like, they'll just edit it out. It's no problem.
Yeah.
And, to my credit, the reason that I thought that I couldn't do that was because it was a dolly shot. And I thought, this is going to be one continuous shot.
Yeah.
And they're not going to be cutting from a dolly, whether or not they do or not, I'm not sure. But that was my thinking. And to this day, I sometimes think, was it that? Was it that where they just went, ugh, he was too new.
We had this perfect dolly shot lineup and this fucking guy, whatever, he just blew the whole thing, like, cut him out. Yeah, no way, man. There's no possible way that was the reason. Like, unless you're like Spike Lee and you have this like perfect shot lined up and everything is like, it's a oneer or something. It's like Scorsese, or, you know, you've got this like one perfect shot lined up.
Yeah.
But you're the opening scene of La La Land and it's like one giant dancing scene. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, chances are they just want, like, again, then that's you thinking, you know, you thought that, you know, cause like they wanted this style, they wanted this dolly shot. And it's gotta be perfect. They might just want that for the master. So that's where like they have this giant dolly set up and they're following people. I don't know, you're doing the scene, but they're maybe walking and talking. And it's just kind of creeping along as people are talking and the camera's following. And they might cut back to it moving later. Like, do they do punch in for it? And then your character's about to leave. So they punch back out and use the same wide shot. And then the camera's still moving. So yeah, you just, again, you don't know. Even if you're a cinematography major and you understand, you don't know what their editing process is. You don't know what they're going to use. And it is best, like that actor was saying, just move on. Like, I've been on sets where I just did a movie last year and the guy, they just kept repeating. He kept fucking up and he'd start back at the end of the sentence and do it. And like, yeah, the camera's static in that sense, but like, you might as well, if the camera's rolling, just start again and keep doing it, because they're probably going to do another take for, again, reasons out of your control. The dolly grip screwed up. They want to change the light. The background actors are shit in the bed, which that happens a lot.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like all of these things come into play. You might as well, if they're still rolling, just take it back and go again. And I'm the same way, though, man. I beat myself up sometimes when I screw up. And I, if you start to, again, let that kind of grate on you, like, all these people are waiting around and millions of dollars are being wasted, and blah, blah, blah. Like, you can't do that. Just focus on what it is. And again, if you've done your research and you know the script, you know your character, you should be able to jump right back in. But every once in a while we psych ourselves out. I remember last year, that same film, I was like my last scene and I knew the director, and there's one like guy's grip who's like a younger actor who kind of looked up to me, and he was watching and we're all shooting the scene, and I was just blanking. I've been doing the scene. As soon as it got to like my coverage, I couldn't remember the shit, and it's, that still happens to me. I felt like an idiot, and I'm like, it's wasting time, and then I'm like, you know, this is, everyone's going to remember me for this, for screwing up, and I did it in front of this young guy who looked up to me, and I screwed up, and then the director, and I'm like, okay, everyone, like, that's a wrap, I'm Brandon, and everyone's like, oh, like, gosh, like, yeah, that's the guy who can't fucking get his lines right. Like, I started going down that, and I felt so bad. I'm like, well, yeah, but I did other stuff on the movie. And it was good some other times. And in the editing room, they're going to push through that anyways and piece it together. So I don't know. You just kind of got to move through that stuff.
It's right.
But when it comes to being cut out of stuff, man, I can't tell you how many times that's happened to me. I've had some really big parts that, like, thankfully I got cut out because I got something better in the end. And other times I got cut out and it really sucked.
you mean conflict-wise? Conflict-wise?
No, like, something better. Like, either booked something and then canceled, or got to set, shot it, expecting it to come out and getting an email that I'm cut.
Yeah.
Like, or in other cases, like, actually my first time on Supernatural, I had a principal role. It was like sort of a bigger role. And I got, it was like, you know, your early credits, you get your whole friends and family and they all watch and everyone's cheering you on. And like, and the episode aired and I had family contacted me like, I didn't see it. We watched the whole episode twice. I'm like, no, like, no, you didn't. Like, you just wasted 2 hours of your life because I wasn't in the episode. Like, they cut my entire role
from
the episode. But because of that, even though Supernatural is known for reusing actors, because it's a local show and there's so many seasons, it did end up enabling me to get a bigger part.
Yeah.
Which was good. This past pilot season, I finally I booked a small recurring on a pilot, that I don't know if it's been greenlit yet. But I was like, so stoked. I was like, yes, like, this is great. It's with, some pretty big actors, and the character could develop. Like, it's one of those characters that it's going to be around. If you're seeing these characters, then that character's going to be around. And I got it a day later. I got an email from casting saying, in the script revisions, they've written out that scene and consequently your character. But the producers will endeavor to use you should the show be picked up. It's like, I'm worried. I'm like, well, that would be nice, but I'm not going to hold my breath. Like, I don't know. And that was a huge amount. They still booked me, still had to pay me. Like, I was talking to wardrobe about, I was going to go to my wardrobe session the next day. But because I was officially booked, I got paid for, because on pilots too, there's no buyouts because they don't know if it's going to happen or not. They still pay me my full rate
for doing that,
which is great. But then I found out that the actor playing my opposite, that I would be in it, I found out it was a friend of mine. She had it even worse, that she went through wardrobe. She's about to do it. Then they decided to shoot the whole, they were supposed to play some major city in the US. And then they decided, yeah, we're actually going to shoot it in that major city instead. So they couldn't get the visa stuff together and they had to recast her role.
So
I don't know if the show picks up, am I going to be, you know, with that person? Am I going to match that new person? Should they see that other character? I don't know. So it's like, man, I've had so many times I had a bigger part on, or what could have been a recurring thing on iZombie, which is a big show that shot up here, just finished its sixth season, something like that. And I shot it, did the whole scene, met a bunch of guys, and I got a courtesy email saying that they couldn't, it was too long of an episode. They just couldn't work that in, and they cut the whole scene out of it. So I shot it. The footage is out there somewhere, but they couldn't use it. And they're like, oh yeah, but don't worry, because you weren't seen. Like, you could come back and be seen for other stuff. I'm like, yeah, that didn't really happen. But yeah, I went out one more time for that show. But it was a great experience on set. But like, that just happens, man. But like with, like I said, with the Supernatural, like I got a bigger role. I last fall I did a big car commercial, a U.S. national, first one I ever did. All the commercials I've done, I never managed to do one. And it was a huge deal. It was a U.S. national. It was some friends in it. And then we got cut out. All of the actors got cut from the whole thing. I remember seeing the footage and like, well, I remember the car. I remember when they shot that with the car, but no actors. Where are they? We all got friggin' cut. Yeah. Like, you can imagine how that feels. But that enabled me to go out for another car commercial, which I did a few months ago, which will be coming out in Christmas. But the casting for that was smaller, and the chances of me knowing the whole script would be very hard to cut me out of that one. So fingers crossed for that. But that, so, you know, sometimes these things work out. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to say two things about what we're talking about here. Number one is Brandon is talking about the fact that he was actually booked roles and then got cut out or didn't get them, or they got canceled and then he booked bigger roles. But one thing that I learned, and it took me a few years to understand, is that when you start acting and you start getting the opportunity to audition for TV or film, you are going to inevitably be auditioning for small roles, usually co-stars. That's probably how you're going to start. And you really want to get those. You really want to book those auditions. And you're bummed when you don't get it, especially when you first start, because you're not getting that many auditions and it seems like this huge deal. And when I first started auditioning and I wasn't booking TV. And then there were many times where I would see the role on TV. It was this really small co-star or whatever. Like, oh yeah, I auditioned for that. And then later on, I would go on to book a much bigger role, which I would not have been able to do had I booked that first one. So that's actually a really good way to look at auditioning when you first start.
Yeah.
That if you're going in for a co-star, which is essentially, it is the smallest role that you will audition for, and you don't get it, you can always say, well, good, I didn't get it. Because now I have an opportunity to book something bigger, because it's either going to be the same size or it's going to be bigger.
Yeah. And on that note, and something really important, I encourage people to think about it this way, is when you're going for auditions, think of it as all you're doing is auditioning for more auditions.
Yeah.
Like especially if you're starting and you're being seen for things, if you're just getting in the room with casting, they're just getting to know you. Like, they're bringing you in. Like, you might not be perfect, but they see something for you. Say you have no credits at all and they bring you in. Yeah, maybe that headshot, like, they could be the bartender, whatever. And you go in and there's something about you, and they might, you know, if you have a good agent, they keep submitting you. You get in the room and for another one-liner or another, like, no-liner or whatever, they are getting to know you. And like you're saying, you might have something that comes along where you fit that, and they will bring you in. So rather than like, I need this role for my resume, to pay my rent, like those are the places, the worst places to come from when going into an audition. But rather than like, I'm going to do my best with this audition, and I'm going to get along with and be as available to this casting and be as polite as I can and show that I've done my best. And like statistically, you're probably not going to get the role.
Yeah.
So the best outcome is to get in good with casting.
Right.
Because something eventually is going to, if you're doing the work elsewhere, you're training, which you should be doing right now. If you're doing other work, you're making your own work and you finally get in there and the time, the stars align and you're the right age and you're maybe wearing the right thing and you, you know, look the part. You're like, yeah, we'll give it to him.
Yeah.
And that, like, oh, you just did that and like you did well. And then they, casting does hear sometimes about how people did on set. It is their job to report to them sometimes, usually, hopefully not bad things, but sometimes they'll, especially if they've worked with casting, will be in the room with the director again. So, I'm thinking him for this role. Like, what do you think? Oh yeah, no, we shot him or her in this other, program. Hey, he was good. Okay. Yeah. We'll give him a shot for this guest star. You know what I mean? Like that's literally how it happens.
Yeah, for sure.
That's just your auditioning for more auditions, I think, is just, you know, do what you can, not to take away from the importance of your audition, but that's where you want to be, is just getting in with casting and eventually you're getting experience and you will eventually be brought in for just the right thing.
Yeah. And if you look at this, thing practically, the way that when you first start auditioning, you're going to be seen with a whole lot of other people. You're going to be seen with a ton of other people and you're going to be seen for roles. At least this is the way it works in Chicago. I'm assuming this is the way it works pretty much everywhere. You're going to be seen for auditions at times where the casting directors have more time, where they have the ability to look at more actors. They don't always have that ability. So let's say they are casting for a co-star on a day where they just happen to not be casting that much. They're just not in that big of a rush. And they're like, yeah, okay, let's see. We've got 3 hours to audition people for this co-star. Let's bring in a bunch of people that we haven't seen. We'll bring in like the main players that we know are going to do a good job and are probably going to book this. Somebody will, but let's see some other people, some faces that we haven't seen. You're going to be, that's how you're going to start. Okay. Mm-hmm. Your goal, because it's not going to remain that way. A lot of times they have a limited amount of time and they are going to, your goal should be to get on the A team, the list of actors, the short list of actors that they know are going to do a good audition. They just know it. And so a lot of times they're going to bring in, it's going to be a co-star and they're going to bring in 5 people. Okay. Maybe like 5, 10 people, a small amount of people. I know a casting director here in Chicago who casts a shitload of TV. She brings in 5 people for co-stars. Mm. And she's going to bring in people that she knows are going to do well. And the only reason that she knows they're going to do well is because they have done well so many times.
Yep.
They have a track record of, okay, he did well again. Okay, he did well again. Okay, he did well again. Now I've got a chance where I can only bring in 5 people. I can bet he's going to do well. And that is your goal. That is your goal.
Yeah, that's a sweet spot to be in. They shoot a lot of Hallmark up here. And Vancouver's known for, and Hallmark, say what you want about Hallmark, like they pump out a lot of stuff. And like, it's a really, I don't know, plenty of friends here who make their living doing Hallmark movies. And they're like wholesome, approachable material stories for, you know, family friendly stuff. Like there's a big market for that stuff. And, but some of them are known to be lower budget. So some times there's some, a couple casting directors in particular here who have straight to director producer sessions, which I'm sure you've had there, but and the purpose for that for people listening is they're bypassing the first round of auditions to save money because casting is an expensive process and it's a time waste. So especially if they have an episodic thing and they just don't have the time to rifle through and see a bunch of people, and they have some roles that they just need to cast, like some even major roles, and I'm talking like guest star stuff, or in that sense they are out of time. So casting will bring in select people who know they're going to be good, because again, thinking from the casting director's standpoint, they don't want to look like idiots. If they are bringing in people who are not ready and not prepared, they're the ones that directors, producers can look over and be like, why did we see that guy? But versus like he or she is thinking to bring in a select group of people. They know they're going to be prepared. They know they're going to bring something different. And then it's just up to the directors and producers to be like, I like his vibe. Or I like her vibe. Is that too much like this or like that? And then it's just like slotting in the right. But again, you not knowing why you didn't get the job. It's just like a feel thing. Like does this vibe with the tone of our show, et cetera. And from there on, but yeah, to your point, like they, you want to be in that zone. And I'm in there for certain things. I'll be brought in, for things with a small group of people. And, yeah, cause I'm professional. I get in and out and I do the stuff and I give them an option. And, often, yeah, I'll get some good feedback and, but I don't get the job. And, but that's the best I can hope for. I leave the room. They're happy to see me. I just didn't get the job for reasons unbeknownst to me. And
yeah.
I just have to carry on. And on that point, like you can't let it eat you up. You got to stay busy doing other things. And when that's what I find, when I stay busy rehearsing a play or I'm in class or I'm doing another project, you just literally don't have the brain power to worry about that thing that just happened. Because you're doing and you're pushing forward in your craft and the thing that you love, which you should love this, by the way, and it should be fun. It should be the thing you love to do. So what else are you doing to show that? Are you in classes? Are you doing things? Are you creating stuff? Like that should be your concern, not if you get a certain job or not. Like it's a grind. And like I was going to say in my job, I think you sort of asked me this ahead of time. Was it an immediate switch over or was it like a gradual thing? Well, as everyone knows, there's no like job office for actors. You go down, I'm going to sign up for an acting job. Like you, it's a long process.
Yeah.
So
here to be an actor, please.
Yeah. I'll be in that Hollywood movie. Yeah. That'd be great. Thanks. Yeah. I'll be at my trailer. Like it doesn't obviously work like that. Sure, I have a handful of friends who have had the so-called big break, but that really is the exception. Like it's being in the right place at the right time. And they're success. They're skilled people. Those my friends, but yeah, it was a time and place thing for sure. But the rest of us are grinding away and like trying to get jobs and working where we can. And in my job in set deck, I would go from like 12 plus hour days on set. I started getting more auditions. Like, well, I can't really do that as much. So I started to scale back my responsibility. I had like supervisor positions and I would scale back to be kind of lowest on the totem pole kind of thing. And and that was fine. And then I was just kind of day calling and then I would have supportive bosses who would let me go. And for those out there who know about like the grind of getting to auditions and leaving your job in the middle of the day, I would like be working on a dirty set, pissing rain outside and covered in mud. I get my car. I ask my boss, like, so like it would go like this. I would like get a call for work at 5 PM, 5:30, get an audition for the next day. I'm like, shit.
Yeah.
I tell my boss like, yeah, hey, I just took this day of work. I got an audition now. They're like, oh, okay. And if they say yes, then it's cool. I can leave at lunch. I'll stay long. Work that day, get to lunch. Get in my car, change from head to toe, driving my like manual transmission car, get across town. They're running late, be stressed, get in the room, do the callback, get out, need to eat lunch, inhale a Subway sandwich, get back to work, change back into my clothes, and either have a coworker turn to me and be like, can you pass the wrench? As if I never left. Or they'd be like, dude, where the fuck were you? Like we just unloaded this huge truck and like, you're just fucking off. Yeah. I'm like, oh, it feels so awful. And I would like have those days and I'm like, I don't know, man. Like I'll make it up. I'll do whatever I can. Like, this is just, I have to do this. But that was to that point. Like I had a moment, I had kind of a revelation moment in my career that was helpful. It was a mindset shift. It was rather than here's my job and here's my career. Like job is above the career. I had a conversation with my agent after I turned down an audition in the middle. Like I had it was lean times and work and I needed to work. And I turned down this like a pretty decent opportunity early on in my career. I'm like, yeah, but I need to earn this money. So that's justified. But my agent was like, look, I understand that. But like when I give you these opportunities, you got to go. Like you have to do it. And it's not a mean thing. It's not like a, it's just, it's, that's the matter of the fact they have, because she, you don't know the back and forth of the agent. They're like, yeah, he's new. He's really good for this. He's going to see you. And he's going to, yeah, you got to see him because he's, you know, he's just perfect for this. And then the next conversation would be, oh, by the way, remember that actor I talked up to you?
Yeah.
Yeah, he can't make it.
Yeah.
So it's like then casting, well, what the hell was all that about? And then the agent looks like an idiot.
Right.
So they need to know. But I had that shift once where I kind of shifted the balance of put acting first and my job second. And I'm in my head, I'm like, rather than being like, hey, can I go to this audition? And it's okay if I don't, but I just, you know, I really need, versus like, I'm going to this audition. I got to go there. It's at this time. I hope you can cover me or like, I'll make it up to you. I'll stay late whenever. But bottom line is I got to go. This is like what I'm doing. And when you act that way, when you act confidently and you present yourself that way, people respect that as well. Some people might be like, well, fuck you. Like we're all working. So find another job or whatever. That might happen. It might. And it's scary. But you also have those people, if you're a good person and you're a hard worker at your job, they recognize you're not leaving them in the lurch because you're shitty at the job. You're leaving to pursue something because you have a passion. And they might even see something like that in you, in themselves. They're like, man, I wish I had that guy or girl's passion for something, to pursue something else. And I'm going to support them for my sake, for their sake. And that's where I found some really great bosses over and teachers who were supportive over time, just to help me push through. And yeah, that's I've been lucky that way. So it's a grind, man. It's a grind.
If you like this podcast, please go to your podcast app, scroll down, and give me a rating or a review. Thank you for listening.